Pepper Audio presents Your Sacred Self, written and read by Dr. Wayne Dyer. You have been facing the wrong way. The most important insight you can have is to realize that you have been facing the wrong way for the better part of your life. Take a moment, right now, to experience what I mean. Picture yourself in any position that you like. Standing, sitting, lying down, whatever is easiest for you to imagine. Now look at that mental picture of yourself. What you see in this exercise is a you who is always looking away from yourself, always looking outside of yourself. You are facing the wrong way. Now imagine being able to shift around and face the opposite direction. If you could in some magical way do so, then you would be facing inward. We've all been taught to look outside of ourselves for sustenance, to look beyond the self for power, love, prosperity, health, happiness, and spiritual fulfillment. We've been conditioned to believe we get life's bounty from somewhere outside of ourselves. But it's possible to reverse our gaze from outward to inward. And when we do, we find an energy we've sensed but not previously identified. There dwells within all human beings a divine energy. The power of this energy permeates our entire being and permits us to perform every function in the vast repertoire of human thoughts and behaviors. There are two aspects to this divine energy. The outer aspect causes the heart to beat and the lungs to inflate and the senses to function. It essentially keeps our physical bodies alive. The inner aspect of this energy is dormant, but it can be awakened. This inner universe is vaster than the outer universe. Inner joy makes all joy that is experienced in the world of the senses seem meaningless. When the divine light within you is experienced directly, it adds a radiance to life, unlike anything that can be described with words or pictures. When you discover your sacred self, you awaken this dormant inner energy and let it guide your life. The word most commonly used to describe this inner force is spiritual. When I talk about spirituality and being spiritual, I am describing an attitude toward God and the inner journey of enlightenment. I'm speaking of expanding the godlike qualities of love, forgiveness, kindness, and bliss within ourselves. In my interpretation, spirituality is not dogma or rules. It is light and joy and focuses on the experience of love and inner bliss, radiating those qualities outward. I call the journey to discover your sacred self your sacred quest. You need to begin looking inward at who you are and why you are here instead of outward at the physical world and things within it. There was an instant in time when you were nowhere. The moment before your conception, you were nowhere. Then, in one holy instant, you went from nowhere to now here. There will be another holy instant when you will go from nowhere to now here. We call that moment death. Yet you, the divine, changeless, eternal, invisible you, will live on. If it is true that we are a part of an intelligent system, we can assume that we go from nowhere to now here for some purpose. With this realization, you can stop doubting that you are a divine creation with purpose and just accept that you are. You are a part of this intelligent system, and you are here for some divine reason. That reason, you can surely guess, is concerned with the spiritual inner energy I am writing about. Knowing your spiritual self is your sacred quest and your life challenge. So many of us have grown up believing that who we are is this body we carry around, the job we perform, and the religion we practice. Our lives are involved with externals at the same time that we see that they are always changing and shifting. Yet somewhere inside of ourselves, we feel the same. You may not have given that self aspect much of your awareness, but if you do, you will discover an inner self that never changes but is trapped in a changing world. Someday, your physical self will probably rest beneath a tombstone that records the date of your birth and the date of your death. But your inner soul knows you are eternal. Knowing this in a way that leaves no room for doubt will greatly enable your sacred quest. When you reach that state, knowing that who you are is the unchanging self, you will be on purpose in your life. Sogyal Rinpoche, in the Tibetan book of Living and Dying, puts this into words that are worth framing. In the modern world, there are few examples of human beings who embody the qualities that come from realizing the nature of mind. So it is hard for us even to imagine enlightenment or the perception of an enlightened being, and even harder to begin to think that we ourselves could become enlightened. Even if we were to think of the possibility of enlightenment, one look at what composes our ordinary mind, anger, greed, jealousy, spite, cruelty, lust, fear, anxiety, and turmoil, would undermine forever any hope of achieving it. Enlightenment, he continues, is real, and each of us, whoever we are, can, in the right circumstances and with the right training, realize the nature of mind and so know in us what is deathless and eternally pure. This is the promise of all the mystical traditions of the world, and it has been fulfilled and is being fulfilled in countless thousands of human lives. You can be one of those thousands of enlightened humans. This will happen as you discover the nature of your true self and relegate the part of yourself that is centered on the physical to the background where it belongs. From there, it can cheer you on and support your higher self rather than act in ways that sabotage your true spiritual essence. This whole business of a sacred quest is real, and you can know it, love it, and cherish it. Once you do, you will never want to go back to any way of living that is inconsistent with your divine, though invisible, self. You are not that name, that occupation, that social security number, that body. You are eternally light and divine, regardless of what you have done or failed to do, regardless of what family you lived in, or what you may have been labeled. You are holy, and you have a purpose for being here. How will you experience your physical life when you have met this challenge of facing inward and living by the directives of your spiritual self? You will still chop wood and carry water, as the ancient Zen proverb tells us. You will not suddenly develop totally new talents or interests. However, you will have a level of awareness that lets you see things that have been hidden. Here are some of the insights that will give you a sense of peace and inner fulfillment. You will experience and enhance the meaningfulness of coincidences. You will become aware that there are no accidents in this intelligent system. You realize that everything that shows up in your life has something to teach you. You appreciate everyone and everything in your life. You are unable to entertain any doubts about the universal source of energy. You know that all beings are a part of it and receive sustenance from it. You are convinced that all weakness and falsehood come from a refusal to know this. You will feel loved. You will call for and accept divine guidance. This vital spiritual nourishment is felt in both your inner and outer experiences. Immobilizing fear diminishes as you feel the presence of the divine energy within you. All seems as it should be, even though you may not understand it. Your desires to right wrongs and fix the broken parts of your life are also part of this divine plan. You pursue your desires to serve God and humanity with clarity and peace. By focusing your inner energy on the beauty that surrounds you, you will receive that energy from your surroundings. With practice, this kind of receptiveness will become a source of strength and sustenance in your daily life. You will sense that anything that is destructive to one human is destructive to all. This higher awareness will lead you to the conclusion that Mahatma Gandhi came to, that God has no religion. That awareness will give you a loving energy that will help to bring all of us together. You will make a new agreement with reality. When your soul becomes the guiding force in your life, you will break the ordinary agreement with reality intellectually and physically. Your level of awareness will shift so dramatically that you will no longer feel bound by the agreement that defines reality for most others. You will experience surrender and acceptance. You will finally stop fighting and simply let go. You will accept that God knows what she is doing. This surrendering process will make you more effective in your sacred quest. You will become a waking dreamer. Everything that you are capable of achieving while dreaming will be possible while awake. The power of your mind to manifest what previously could only occur in sleeping dreams will begin to be your awakened reality. Some people take a lifetime to learn how to become a waking dreamer, to literally be in a dream state while awake. With your heightened awareness and the guidance of your higher self, you will become one of those waking dreamers. You will know the power and ecstasy of silence. As Herman Melville wrote, "Silence is the only voice of our God. All profound things and emotions of things are preceded and attended by silence." You will know that there is a spiritual solution to every problem. Problems such as addictions to drugs, foods, and alcohol have solutions in your higher self. By going within, you will see your excessive desires for something outside of yourself as an inadequate refuge for worldly pain. When you begin to achieve the highest levels of pleasure and euphoria by facing inward, the desire and the need for externals will simply disappear. Every problem, be it with relationships, finances, health, or self-image, has a solution in the sacred self. When you are peaceful, experience silence, meditate, and listen, really listen to God, you will be directed away from the worldly and toward the divinity that is within you. You will know what you need to do. You will shift from acquiring to sharing. You will desire less and yet feel more fulfilled. You will shift your attention away from yourself and take pleasure in serving others. You will live authentically. You will accept yourself, knowing that whatever behaviors you exhibited in the past, even the ones that may have been destructive and immoral, were a part of who you were at the time, and they had great lessons built into them for you to transcend. You will be able to say with conviction, "I am what I am." While some of the people who are close to you may find this difficult to accept, you will no longer be able to compromise yourself. You will be less judgmental and more forgiving. You will begin seeing that judging others does not define them, it defines you. Consequently, you will be less inclined to judge anyone or anything. You will also begin to forgive yourself. You will see mistakes as lessons for you to transcend. This will free you from the tyranny of self-recrimination. You have made the decision to be free. Up to now, I have described the sacred quest and how it will feel when you turn your life around. The following section offers suggestions for daily practice. These exercises will help you with the about-face process. Each day, make an attempt to serve others in some small way, and do not tell anyone. Copy this ancient truth and reread it daily. When you seek happiness for yourself, it always eludes you. When you seek happiness for others, you will find it yourself. Practice making meaningful coincidences. Get a clear picture in your mind of something that you would like to see happen in your life. A job opportunity, meeting your perfect partner, quitting an addictive behavior. Keep your inner focus on this picture and extend love outwardly as frequently as possible with this picture in mind. Keep yourself appraised of the inner world where you do all of your living. With this awareness, you will begin to know your divinity. Out of this awareness, you will be able to co-create the world that you desire. Have private conversations with God. In these conversations, rather than ask for special favors, affirm your willingness to use all of your inner strength to create solutions. Take time to appreciate beauty. Attempt to remove all enemies from your thoughts. Think of yourself as limitless as you make a new agreement with reality. Picture yourself able to accomplish anything your mind can envision. Allow yourself the freedom to dream of flying, shape-shifting, practicing bilocation, disappearing and reappearing. Make your own agreement with reality that is dependent solely on what you want it to be. Surrender. Stop asking, "Why me?" Dream awake. Allow your mind to create all that you can create in your sleeping dreams. By practicing this exercise, you will someday be unable to distinguish between your waking dream and your sleeping dream. Give yourself time each day for silence. It may be a form of meditation, but if this is not your choice, then simply allow yourself some silent moments. Experience your silence for at least 30 minutes each day. Imagine a spiritual solution to your problem. This is a spiritual approach to the resolution of your problem. You have become the observer. You are viewing the emotions concerning the problem simply as energy. Before long, you will see the emotions disappearing. Your feelings of sadness and anxiety and fear will dissipate just through the act of observing. As you become less and less attached emotionally, the problem slowly disappears as the solution appears. A spiritual solution is one in which you detach yourself personally from the outcome and see the energy as flowing through you. By observing that energy, you make yourself separate from the pain. The act of compassionate observation releases the problem. Lighten your load beginning today. Go through all of the possessions that you no longer use and share them with others. You can do this with everything you own. Work at being content with who you are rather than pleasing others by being inauthentic. Say to yourself, "I am what I am, and it's okay as long as I'm not hurting anyone else in the process." Direct your attention to what pleases you. Judge not. These, then, are some suggestions that you can work on daily as you begin your quest for your sacred self. You have the capacity to meet this challenge, but before you will be truly ready, you need to examine many of the habits that you've acquired over a lifetime of having your ego and the world of the material be the authoritative forces in your life. In the years following your arrival from nowhere to now here, you were taught many beliefs about what you were capable of doing and what was impossible for you to do. It is time to let go of beliefs that have served you well, but now keep you from moving along your sacred path. The process of letting go is easily understood if you can picture life as giving exams. Just as we are required to pass exams throughout our school experience, so too are we required to pass exams in the larger school called life. If we pass them, we move on to the next level, and then take the exam for that level throughout our stay and now here. If we don't pass, we repeat the course and continue at that level until we get the lesson. Many years, even an entire lifetime, might be consumed repeating a lesson in order to pass a spiritual examination. We might find ourselves repeating the same behaviors tirelessly and depressingly, over and over, without getting the lesson that life is trying to teach us. You may find yourself going from one bad relationship to another, even seeking the same person each time, only in a different body. Repeatedly, you might find yourself being dominated, unappreciated, or taken for granted by an inconsiderate partner. Perhaps you continue in an occupation repeating the behaviors of previously unsatisfying job experiences. You could continually latch onto the same kinds of germs and repeat debilitating disease patterns. People who successfully put themselves onto the spiritual path are living the life they love and feeling productive because they realize that life patterns are trying to tell them something. They understand that those situations are the exams. The same responses, the same answers that they've always been given previously, will not get different results. The decision is made to pass this exam in this area at this time by responding differently. To move on to the next level in this curriculum called life, you have to pass the exams along the way. Having a personal history keeps us from now. This is a radical idea, perhaps, but I am asking you to consider the possibility of totally eradicating your personal history from your consciousness and simply living completely in the present moment. The first thing that might pop into your mind, as it did into mine when I began to consider this possibility, is that it is impossible. I do have a memory, and it would be folly for me to pretend that I am not the product of my past. What I am asking you to develop is a forgettery to go along with your memory. The point is that as a result of being a product of your past, you are dancing to a tune thrown at you by others. In order to take the steps upward toward your sacred quest, you must toss out the idea that you are unable to take those steps in the first place. Let go of all the beliefs that convince you of your inadequacies and shortcomings. Clean out that closet of worn-out loyalties to what you can and cannot do. Just open yourself up right in this moment. Be like a clear, blank slate. Nothing is imprinted or projected onto this slate. It begins with no. It ends with now. There is no guilt about erasing your personal history. There is great love and respect for all that you have learned up until now, but now is blank and, most important, open to all possibilities. No restrictions, no limitations, only the willingness to experience God and the entire divinity of the universe within yourself. Your life is no longer to be constrained by what you've known as your personal history. Your individual soap opera has received its cancellation notice. In the instant that you drop that personal history, you become eternal. You always have been. You always will be. Finally, you are working on answering the question, who am I? Your answers no longer need be confined to the labels that defined your body and your life experience. Your personal history has attempted to convince you that you are one or several of the labels that you have been assigned. Ultimately, you adopted the labels as who and what you were. In the process of erasing your personal history, you need to remove all the artificial labels. Here are some of the things that you are not. You are not your name. The label that is your name originated in antiquity, usually based on the work of your ancestors. Your name was given to you to help distinguish your body from the other bodies around you and to give others a word to use when they want to refer to you. But don't for a moment think that this is who you are. Indeed, it is who you are not. You are not your body. Notice how the previous sentence uses the phrase, your body. This implies that the body is something that you possess. You are the possessor of the body and the invisible force behind the body, but not the body itself. The body is nothing more than a conglomeration of raw material, including bones and gristle and blood and iron and calcium and skin. As you consult your personal history, you will find lots of trauma about the body's importance. Were you taught that your appearance said a lot about you? Most of us were taught to spend hours before mirrors worrying about posture, physique, skin, absence or presence of hair, weight, height, and on and on. But this is your false self at work. You own the body. You are not the body. You are not your mind. Just as we say your body, we also say your mind. This implies the owner of the mind. You think thoughts with your mind. Therefore, these are the thoughts, and there is the thinker of the thoughts. For most of your life, you've been taught that you are your mind. You've been training your intellect, attending classes ad infinitum, and identifying yourself somehow with what you know. As you leave your personal history behind, you will leave behind the notion that you are your mind. You are not your occupation. You are not engineer, nor teacher, nor secretary, nor shopkeeper. These are choices that the invisible divine you has made as your way of fulfilling your heroic mission while visiting the now here. The more your position becomes defined as who you are, the more difficult it is for you to know truth and freedom. The role identification itself can keep you away from your own true higher self, since the role of occupation is the dominant force in your life. Dropping your personal history involves shedding the notion that you are what you do. Remember this exercise in logic. If you are what you do, then when you don't, you aren't. Make every effort to remove these labels from yourself and know that you are not what you do, nor are you the doer. You are the one who watches the you who is doing. You are not your relationships. Certainly the love energy between you and all of those in your immediate circle is very significant, but it is not who you are. You are not your country, your race, or your religion. Discard these names, and you will identify with the realm of the spirit rather than the world of the ego. Then you are no longer willing to fight the fights of your ancestors who have tried to convince you whom to hate and whom to love. You will no longer participate in the tribal consciousness in which you perceive yourself to be better than another by virtue of your birthplace or skin color. Your personal history has trained you in the ways of your tribe. These are limitations that you do not need to have. Let go of that identification with the labels and choose a new perspective of unity consciousness. You are united with all souls. Their packaging or location is simply irrelevant. It is now time to begin the task of recognizing and releasing beliefs and opinions that do not fit into your new agreement with reality. Take a look at some of those ingrained beliefs and shift them out of your consciousness. Your personal history is replete with beliefs. These beliefs are at the core of your understanding of what it is that constitutes your reality. You have used them to explain why your life has taken the course it has. Resolve to remove those that are inconsistent with the new agreement with reality that you are creating. Now you will be asked to identify and then change core beliefs that you no longer want. You might wonder why one would hold on to unwanted belief systems. In Be As You Are, Ramana Maharshi, one of India's 20th century saints, has this to say in response to why human beings continue to repeat self-negating ways. Pleasure or pain are aspects of the mind only. Our essential nature is happiness, but we have forgotten the self and imagine that the body or the mind is the self. It is that wrong identity that gives rise to misery. So what is to be done? This mental tendency is very ancient and has continued for innumerable past births. Hence it has grown strong. That must go before the essential nature, happiness, asserts itself. Those are the words of a great saint, Ramana Maharshi. This tape may help you answer the rhetorical question that is being posed by Ramana Maharshi. What is to be done? Here are several of the most common and difficult to undo beliefs that are taught in Western civilization. Examine each of these core beliefs in terms of how it operates in your own life. Then, consider some of the suggestions that I've offered. In the process, you will be rewriting your new agreement with reality and perhaps creating your answers to the question, what is to be done? Remember that your entire life is concerned with the accumulation of energy. The more beliefs that you remove from your inner space, the more room there is for new energy. Ask yourself if these beliefs are ones that you want to maintain or let go of,
And keep in mind, if these beliefs do not serve you, they are lies that live endlessly. As Mark Twain suggests in his famous quote, "The difference between a cat and a lie is that a cat has only 9 lives." Here's the first belief that you need to eradicate from your life. More is better. The pursuit of more confines one to a life of striving. It is impossible to strive and enjoy life. Some of the signs that more is better has become a cornerstone in your life are the following. You must be busy to be fulfilled. You must make more money than you currently are making. You must get a promotion to prove your worth. You need to have more of everything. To change this, you will want to declare a halt to your constant pursuit of more by knowing that you don't need anything else in order to be free. More is better keeps us exclusively in the physical domain. The spiritual self is not allowed in our daily lives. Inner energy is concentrated on accumulations, acquisitions, rewards, trophies, approval, and money. Some people experience guilt, shame, and self-reproach when they think they are being lazy and worthless, and they feel irresponsible when they are not pursuing more. We are taught the game early. Starting in school, we learn to pursue higher grades, additional diplomas, and external titles. There is no peace in this pursuit. The feeling of peace is there when you are facing away from more is better. It indicates that your spiritual self is calling you. The good and the wise lead quiet lives, Euripides said centuries ago. It is not because the pursuit of more is inherently bad that I included at the top of this list. It is because it denies you the peace and harmony that are intrinsic to your sacred quest. You do not have to become inert to be at peace. You can abandon the idea of more is better and replace it with an inner serenity that does not need more in order to be acceptable. You have received beliefs from an endless chain of people who have been willing victims for generations. When you let go of these beliefs, you will open an inner reservoir of space that allows you to accumulate a different kind of energy and will direct you toward peace rather than toward tumult and a bypass operation. Examine carefully how much of your life energy is used in pursuit of what you don't want or need. Practice one day at a time the idea of saying no to more. A very emphatic no, I will not pursue that item. In place of pursuing more is better, spend time playing with your son or granddaughter. Read the New Testament instead of chasing after another object. Go for a long walk along the riverfront rather than spending time trying to get ahead. If you are raised on blame, it is a habit for you to reach for this excuse whenever you wish to explain why something is not working in your life. You can, for instance, blame lack of prosperity on a lot of externals: your culture, the stock market, politicians, your parents, lady luck, the greed of others. You can blame illness on heredity and the flu season and bad luck of the environment. Your sour relationships can be blamed on your partners, their inability to love you, your upbringing, or your parents. Your personality can be blamed on your parents or your genes or your childhood or your siblings or your birth order. And your physical appearance can be the fault of genetics, the food manufacturers, advertisers, or the polluted environment. This is potentially an endless list. The alternative to blame is self-responsibility, becoming an inner-directed person. You may not have been taught to consider taking responsibility for the events of your life. But if you are unwilling to discontinue the blame game, you will be unable to initiate your sacred quest. When you are inclined to think that someone else is responsible for your circumstances, take an instant to say a prayer of thanks for the lesson. The lesson is to become aware that you are the one who is experiencing the feeling. You can do this the instant that you recognize yourself playing the blame game. Feel thankful toward those you've let anger you. Give inner thanks for the reminder that the feeling you are experiencing is inside you, not outside you. Say to yourself, I do not want to be right. I want to know the truth. I want my higher self to rule. No one is to blame for how I am feeling. It is my feeling, and I respect that. These kinds of affirmations will lead you to self-reliance and to the way of the sacred quest. Your spiritual soul will then become the guiding light for the remainder of your time in the now here. Another belief that you have to rid yourself of is that idealism can't coexist with realism. Don't be such a dreamer. Be realistic. Forget about your inner vision. Look around you at what is happening. This is what is real. Have you heard similar pronouncements often in your life? If so, you probably developed an attitude about what was possible and what was impossible. If the ideals that attracted you were labeled impossible, you probably sacrificed them for a way of viewing your world that was based on what others determined was realistic. Discarding that old belief about reality can be a major task on the path of the sacred quest. Are you ready to reconsider your view of reality? Perhaps William Blake's statement will inspire you. He said, if the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear as it is, infinite. Can you imagine your reality in that way? Everything infinite? When your perception is expanded, nothing is real and nothing is imagined. All there is perception. When you cultivate this awareness, your reality is no longer defined by the physical world. At the tiniest quantum level, time is not a reality. Particles can be in more than one place at the same time, and they appear and disappear according to how we observe them and what measuring devices we use. All of this constitutes a new reality. Always remember, we are made of the very same energy. If you want a richer experience of your life, abandon the idea that your reality is only what your senses report. Your inner world and all of the energy of your higher awareness creates a reality very different from that which you've been taught. In this reality, your higher spirit, the loving presence within you, is dominant. In this world, you rely on something quite different than the ordinary reality. Choosing the way of the sacred quest means you will learn to rely on this new reality. Shift back to being the idealist who had inner inklings about the world of spirit. That idealist within you will happily do the following, according to Buddha. Rely on the message of the teacher, not on his personality. Rely on the meaning, not just on the words. Rely on the real meaning, not on the provisional one. Rely on your wisdom mind, not on your ordinary judgmental mind. Here are some suggestions for releasing realism and welcoming idealism. Trust your intuition. You will define your own reality from now on, and your definition will be based on your inner wisdom. There are no limits within, and within is where you are going from now on for your direction. Make a list of all the things you believed in before you were told they were impossible. Writing and drawing about those early beliefs will help to re-energize them. Practice experimenting with your new reality. Keep a vision of what it is that you would like to have occur, or someone you would want to call you. Anything that is important to you, meditate on it, manifesting into your own life. Keep track of all the little things that lead up to bringing it about. After a while, you will notice that your reality has become one in which you play a role as co-creator. As a child, you were aware of a second aspect of your being. Here I am calling that your double, or your ethereal body. As you grew older, you lost touch with this ethereal energy body. This does not mean that it is unavailable to you. Your physical body is what you've come to believe is who you are. Yet this body, in and of itself, is neutral. Your body, in and of itself, can bring you neither peace nor turmoil. It is almost impossible to make contact with your higher self when you only believe in your false self and the material world. Somewhere within you, you are aware that all of the material world is energy. This energy appears solid from the perspective of your eyes, your perceptual equipment. A closer look at the physical world reveals a dance of particles in endless voids of empty space. A closer look at those particles reveals that they are involved in another, tinier dance of more particles in a field of emptiness ad infinitum until there is only energy and no particles. This is our reality. But we've been persuaded that what we see with the limitations of our eyes is the only reality there is. Your body is a part of that perceptual system you have been conditioned to accept. Your task is to dissolve the barrier that separates these two aspects of your being. When you do this, you leap into the unimaginable. Here are some suggestions for releasing your belief in physical exclusivity. Open yourself to the possibility of other dimensions of reality being available to you. Affirm to yourself that this is all a possibility. Very few people believed in the existence of microscopic life before the invention of the microscope. There were zillions of tiny creatures swimming around in their own pool of reality, independent of anyone's opinion about them. They exist now in your skin, your eyes, your fingernails, and your hair. All of those things that you sense to be solid are alive with invisible activity. Apply the same awareness to this notion. You can't see it, but you are an energy body and a physical body. Your double would like to introduce itself to you. Our education emphasizes believing in sensory experiences. Such experiences seem to tell us that we are separate, unique, special, and disconnected from each other. Very few of us learn that there is some kind of unity. The truth is that everything is linked, including you, to all other beings. Discard the belief that you are separate from everyone else. You will acquire a reverence for everyone that will turn into love. When we lose our sense of us versus them and know that we are all us, then we have a win-win relationship with life. Practice letting go of your ego's need to be separate from others. Begin viewing yourself as a member of the human family called us. Share your toys with others, especially neighbors and even strangers, as if they were a part of your family. As the English proverb says, the hand that gives, gathers. Treat everyone as if they are part of the tribe you love belonging to. Don't mentally note their differences. Carry an inner determination to see others as just as much a part of you on a spiritual level as is your child or your spouse. Create an affirmation expressing the idea that you are my brother, my sister. You are a part of my us. There are no more thems in my life. You have been taught that there are some bad people in the world who are best ignored. I'm suggesting the contrary. Everyone who comes into your life in any capacity is valuable. The petty tyrants in your life are just as divine as those who provide you with encouragement and support. Emerson put this important lesson like this: the whole course of things goes to teach us faith. The whole course. This means everything that comes your way. Perhaps the single most significant person in my life, the one person who made the greatest difference for me and my own spiritual development, is a person who, by all accounts, was a petty tyrant. This man was my father. He abandoned his family, spent time in prison as a petty criminal, and was abusive toward his wife. At the age of 49, he died from excessive use of alcohol. I have no memory of him. My knowledge of him is based on what I heard and later discovered to be true when I investigated his life. Yet this petty, tyrannical con man was the main character leading to my transformation. I wrote about forgiving my father, and you'll see it when you believe it. I discarded the hatred and the bitterness that I had carried with me for a lifetime. A single act of forgiveness and letting go opened the way to my sacred quest and the writing, speaking, and living of the miracles I write about. I learned what I had to transcend. When I now occasionally slip into some of the behaviors that I know destroyed his life, I remind myself that this is not my path. This is not the kind of father I wish to be. This is not the kind of husband I wish to be. It is his example that helps me get myself back to the path that I know is my spiritual destiny. Be thankful for those petty tyrants. They are there for a very important reason. Ignoring them guarantees that more of them will appear in different bodies later on in your life. Prayers of thankfulness are wonderful affirmations of this truth. The experience of being deserted by a spouse might teach you to be independent. This type of situation may introduce you to the loving presence within. Perhaps you will learn the difference between aloneness and loneliness and decide to love the person you are alone with. The alcoholic years can teach us that we are greater than any substance. We might learn to be thankful for those drunken teachers and consider them instructors from God. Even physical abuse may have a powerful lesson in it. We may discover that we are more than a body. It's possible for us to know that no one can reach our inner self with their blows. Make a list of all the people you have written out of your life as evil or scumbags. Write down everything that their presence taught you. Have you learned to not repeat victim behaviors? Reconsider that so-called scumbag's value to your life. You could not have learned the lesson without that person. The evidence for this is that you obviously needed to bring that person into your life because you did. Look for the fullness of God in everyone. Realize that in some unfathomable way, the fullness is operating even if you cannot see it.